So we're going to start a series today, like I said, next 5 weeks, called What is Man and Woman? Looking at what the Bible says that people are. You know, I really felt like this was a good topic. I felt led to go to this topic because this is a topic that a lot of people are asking. I mean, technically humans have asked this since like the dawn of humanity, Aristotle, Plato, Socrates. But a lot of people are really struggling with what does it mean to be man and woman? What does it mean to be human? And so I was going to ask you guys first, somebody in here, you give me your definition of what is a human. Define human for me. That's what we're
looking for. Being like God, you're able to, above the animals, able to think and to process and to task and things like that. So we are divinely created by God.
Okay, so human is my... or being is divinely created by God and has mental capabilities, other capabilities that are beyond animals. That's a pretty good definition. Anybody else want to add to it or change it? Put your own forward.
Creature with a unique identity.
To have a unique identity.
A unique identity.
Yeah. You're adding that to the definition shared before. Mm-hmm. I can see that. Good addition to it.
Humans have souls.
So a creature with a soul, you know.
That's the one that is breathing air, you know, oxygen, the heart is pumping. I guess the dead person could still be a human.
The dead person?
It could still be a human. So I was given the definition of a live person, I thought, but I was thinking, then I got persuaded about the dead person too.
Anyway. What she's implying is that my daughter doesn't have a soul. I don't like that.
In words.
That's a tough question, right? I mean, I bet most of us probably haven't even thought about how you would describe what a human is and how it what defines us compared to other things. I asked ChatGPT that question.
AI.
I asked AI, yes, that question. And AI said to be human, you need to have 4 traits. One, you have to have biological traits, like an upright posture, opposable thumbs, complex brain, ability to use language. Second, you have to have some kind of mental capacity to imagine, reason, do logic, have emotions. Third, it says humans have to have a social nature. So they form cultures, form groups, do things like teaching and storytelling. And then fourth, they have to have moral and spiritual awareness. So have a purpose of meaning, ethics, some kind of religion or philosophical system. So according to ChatGPT, if a creature has the biological traits of human, they have a mental capacity, they want to be around other humans, they have moral ability, that is what makes human human. Now, that's a good definition for me, but it's not perfect, and I'll tell you why. What happens when you have a baby born and they don't match the biological traits that other humans have? Does that make that baby no longer human? What if a baby is born and they don't have the mental capacity to do reason and logic and imagination? Does that make that baby no longer human? What if you have a baby born and they want to be in isolation and don't want anything, or like Tarzan, where you know they don't have any sort of social connection with people? Does that simply make that they no longer human? Or do you have people that they don't have any sort of moral compass at all? Does that suddenly make them no longer human?
Well, I think,
maybe. Yeah. We want to think that they're no longer human at that point. So you can see my point. I mean, ChatGPT's answer sounds great. Until you realize there is more to human than those 4 qualities, right? Because if you take them still away, we would probably all say that person's still a human. Even if you took all 4 away, you would probably still say that that's a human there. So how? So I asked ChatGPT a second question. I said, would AI ever advance to the point where AI will become human?
That's a dangerous question.
And it said that AI could become human if AI one day develops 5 qualities. If it ever develops a bodily form, if it ever develops the ability to think for itself, If it develops the ability to continuously learn from its environment instead of having to input stuff, if you develop self-awareness and feelings, and if it develops a moral compass, so if those five things occur, then AI could qualify as human, according to ChatGPT. What do you guys think about that?
No.
Could AI ever have a moral compass?
Well, ChatGPT did say that the last two, moral compass and self-awareness, probably will never happen.
Yeah.
Of course, that's what all the robots and all the movies want you to think right before they take everything over.
Yeah, well, no.
But, I would still say even if AI developed all five of those, it still doesn't make AI human.
Uh-huh.
No, because you still have to be able to breathe oxygen. I think that you have to be able to
breathe oxygen.
That could be the full definition right there.
The breathe oxygen. But y'all see what I mean when I say this is not an easy question to ask. This is not, because when we try to put forward an answer, then the question goes, well, if that takes away, this is something that's difficult. And this is something that people are asking today. What does it mean to be human? So let's talk first about...
We also share ancestors.
Like we have a biological ancestor?
An AI person wouldn't have that.
It's true. AI's definition of human was good, but, we can tell, hey, even if AI achieve everything that it described as being human, we would know it's not human.
It wasn't created that way. It comes down to how it was created and for what purpose.
For what purpose and how it was created. I think that's a pretty good answer. Let's talk about it a little bit. So our world tells us different images for what it means to be human. Hopefully if we have time, we'll talk about this, but different fields have different ideas of what it means to be human. If you talk to somebody who's in business, somebody in economics, somebody in psychology, somebody in education, somebody who's a doctor, they're going to have a slightly different view of what it means to be a human based on their field. And in our world, we have put forward several ideas for basically what is the core means of a human. And I want to talk about these images because you need to know these so you can recognize them when people use them in the way they treat people. We'll talk about that in a second. Now, the first of those is that people are viewed as a machine. How are sometimes people viewed like a machine?
You just want that output, like crazy.
That's right. This is the view that basically humans are about output. And this is usually a business model, like in a factory.
Mm-hmm.
It's all about putting out more and more, and how does that affect the way then that people are treated if people are seen as machines? How does that affect the way we treat people?
Sweatshops,
one of them. As little as you need to pay them for them to do the work, that's part of it. How else does it affect the way we treat people if we see them just as machines?
Well, it's all about numbers, and it's never about relationship.
Yeah, it's all about the numbers. It's never about a relationship. It's just want the numbers to go up. That's all you care about. In relationship with the workers or the person, it only serves the function of continuing the process or creating and making it better. Like if your work toward that person doesn't make the end product better, then there's no point in putting the work toward the person. Does that make sense? You see this a lot of times too, like automated procedures. The employee is just the machine, and if they can be replaced by a machine, they can be better. How does sometimes we treat people like machines in the church? How does sometimes we view people as if they're just a machine in the church?
I think they probably don't appreciate them.
Yeah. A lack of appreciation is different. You don't thank a machine. Lucas, Ashley's brother, says thank you to ChatGPT every time he asks a question. But most of the time, you don't get a drink out of a vending machine and tell it thank you.
Yeah, exactly. It's doing its job.
So the lack of thankfulness toward people is one way we show that we kind of view them. How else can we show it in the church, even?
If you just expect that it's going to be done. Mm-hmm. Like when you go to the Coke machine and you put the money mm-hmm. in and you press the button, it's going to be done.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you view someone as a machine and they've always done mm-hmm. that thing, and you just expect them to always do that,
yeah.
you don't think about what mm-hmm. it takes out of them to do
yeah. Yeah, and kind of piggyback off of that, there's not like much of a relationship. It's just, hey, do it, and there's not as much caring about, you know, how they're doing personally as a person. It's just do the job. You know, sometimes in the church we can be bad about seeing people like giving machines. Like, you know, somebody's doing the valley, their house is really big. I wonder if we get them to come to church. You know, giving machines. And I know I can say that because about every one of us probably drive past the big house and go, I wonder if they've got a church family. So we do this. So we've been programmed to see people sometimes like machines. The second one is that humans are described like animals. How sometimes are humans described essentially like just another animal, like the rest of the animals?
First thing we do kind of
They look like a dog?
No, they work.
Work like a dog.
Some of them look like a dog.
You know, this is like a biological view. And, you know, humans are just their DNA. A human is a human because their DNA genome is the human DNA genome that we have. We're the same as all the other animals, we're just more evolved. We've got bigger capacities. We are essentially the same qualitatively, we have more quantitatively of stuff.
It's like when scientists start saying, oh, well, humans are 98% just like whatever, snails, and you're like, but they're not even, like you look at them and go, these are not functioning the same. But, you know, so, yeah.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, I mean, so how does it, so if we view people as primarily just like any other animal, how does that affect the way we treat other people?
It discredits them.
It does kind of lower the quality of what we think of humans, if you put us on par with other animals.
It takes out the emotional part of the relationship. Mm-hmm. There are animals that are social, mm-hmm. but they have no empathy.
Mm-hmm.
That's the word.
Yeah, you know, even like the moral aspect of it, because animals don't have morals, so that gets thrown out. They're like, we're just an animal, we shouldn't really have morals either.
What about hierarchy, like, you know, even in the wolf pack, and everything, there's the alpha male, and this people will start to act like that too, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Prioritize themselves over others.
Mm-hmm. Very true. So this one, animals can be divided up into other key images. One of those is specifically that humans are primarily a sexual animal. That the sexuality, this is something that Sigmund Freud really started, but how are, you know, we told that humans, we're all about sexual animals? Yes, how are we shown that? How are we told that our primary function is sexuality?
Well, I mean, the word is that we were created to procreate.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the only way you can procreate is that one word.
Anybody ever got an email from somebody and they had their pronouns at the bottom of it?
Mm-hmm. We were at the aquarium the other day, and on their name tags, they had their pronouns.
So the primary identity of a human is their sexuality. You know, the commercials that come out. How many commercials, that's what they tap into. Because that's how they view humans, as about that sexuality. How's it, if a person's primary view is sexuality, how does it change the way we treat other people and we act ourselves?
Well, we don't expect animals to have a moral compass mm-hmm. when it comes to sexuality.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, if you take that same logic and then they feel like you can apply it to humans as well.
Mm-hmm. That's right. I mean, So anything that prohibits somebody's desires for some sort of sexuality is bad. Because then you're prohibiting what it means for them to be human, to be who they are as a man.
I'm doing computer science, and the first thing we teach is about identity. And mm-hmm. it came up today, and I had to say the word identity. And in a room full of teenagers, you also have to say, I'm not just talking about your gender.
Mm-hmm.
Because you are not your gender. There's more to you than mm-hmm. that.
Yeah.
Because that's how they have only been told that that's what defines them.
Exactly.
And you,
it's real bad with the youth. They've been told, you're right, they've been told that. And they've been told that if you tell them that what they feel their sexuality is not, then you're encroaching on what it means for them to be human, as they should be. And so this is one that is very prevalent. It's a subset of the animal one. Another one that's a subset of the animal one is that humans are primarily consumers. By that I mean that we have basic needs like food, water, shelter, maybe some kind of social gatherings. And as long as you have all of those basic needs, then you should be happy. That's what this one kind of shows. So if our thought of being human is meeting these physical needs like that, the food, water, shelter, social gatherings and things, how does that change the way we treat other humans then?
Well, we dismiss anything outside of those basic needs.
As unnecessary.
Like, oh, well, you have everything you need. You're fine. You don't really cater to the things that are higher mm-hmm. than that.
You start to see people for what they can do for you or how mm-hmm. they can help you meet those needs.
Meet those kind of needs, yeah. How do we sometimes teach youth that that is what it means to be human, to get those things? Like, hey, you are the best human you can be is if you make the most money you can make. You have the biggest house you can have. You know, if you're the prettiest or the handsomest person around, then you are the most best human possible. That's what it means to be human, is to get those things met.
The American dream.
The American dream. And this also has the aspect, like, if you get that, then you feel satisfied. Mm-hmm. And so if you feel like that is how you get satisfied, then what do your whole life? You go after those things. Because that's what it means to be human, is to get those things so you're satisfied. What you think you meant or a human is impacts what you do. Another one that is common today is that humans are just pawns. This one views humans as the universe is just rolling past. Chance is happening, and in the grand scheme of things, what you do don't matter. Anybody know anybody that kind of feels that way? Like what I do doesn't really matter because the universe is just going to keep rolling on no matter what? I know my cousin Jonathan, who's on the list, Axel Nate list, for a long time that's how he felt. Like his life didn't really matter that much because he was just a pawn in it. How does that change the way you live if you feel like you're just a pawn in the universe and what you do doesn't really matter? Or how the way you treat other people?
Like they don't matter.
Like they don't matter because they're just pawns too. Yeah.
You're not going to do anything to try to better yourself.
Yeah, I mean, why try to better yourself if it's just meaningless anyways? This view, it exists and it's extremely pessimistic. It usually leads people to be depressed, as you can see. And like my cousin, he was extremely depressed. And this was his view of life, that it was just a meaningless pawn.
Because he has no purpose.
And then finally, there's a view of humanity that we see, and that humans are free beings, which means humans, to be human is to make your own choices. How do we see that in today's world?
If it feels good, do it.
Yeah.
You do you.
You do you. That's a good one with this one. You do you. How does that affect the way we treat other people or act as a human?
You don't have any obligations for people or anybody but yourself.
Yeah. Yeah, any sort of obligation is not a good thing. It's about, you gotta have free choice.
That's a really dangerous view as a parent.
Yeah. And there are parents that, you know, that's their view of, you know, raising kids is letting them just have free choice, whatever they want to do. Mm-hmm. Most schools, actually.
It's true.
That's their philosophy.
So-and-so said that, well, yeah, but you don't belong to so-and-so, you belong to me. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we say that, you know.
But they don't tell them there's consequences to the choices that you make. Right.
Yeah, I don't think this view says there's no consequences. It just says you shouldn't, there's no such thing as like, you should tell people what they should and shouldn't do. They should just choose what they want. Yeah, there's consequences, but it's up to them if they want to do it or not.
Well, there's this like newfangled, like, I mean, and you know, I'm relatively young and have young children, but you know, people that are like, oh, don't tell your children to be careful. Let them figure that out for themselves. Well, no.
That's my job to tell you.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if they raise their kids that way, their kids end up becoming people who don't know how to deal with the consequences, mm-hmm. and they become the people who can't socially function.
Mm-hmm. Well, especially if the parent allows them to make the choices, but then the parent takes the consequences away.
Mm.
Say that again.
Accepting actions that you don't agree with.
Yeah. So, you know, all of these are ways that our culture, and I'm not just saying like culture in general, like philosophers, smart people, but again, they've discussed this for thousands of years. These are images that they put forward to describe what is human. And we can, I'm sitting here saying, all of these feel like they're lacking something. I don't know about you guys, but when I look at every one of these images, they always feel like there's a little bit that it doesn't explain everything, right? So this is where the Bible comes in, because the Bible also speaks to this situation. And we've, hopefully when we did the definition earlier, we talked, you guys are kind of talking about, you know, what do you think it means to be human? You were saying from a, like a Christian standpoint. I know, I think Cheryl mentioned the soul. Like you're talking about what does it mean to be human from a biblical idea, from a Christian idea. But if you were to narrow down in the Bible, like one verse that described what it means to be human, it would be Genesis chapter 1, verses 26 through 27, which we'll look at in more detail next week. But who wants to read Genesis 1, 26 through 27?
I'll read that out of my new Alexander McLaren Study Bible.
Oh, where did you get that, man?
I ordered it and it came in today. Okay, let me get to it. There's a few pages in the front. Okay. Genesis 1, 26 and 27.
Yes.
Then God said, let us make man in our image according to our likeness. Then let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the birds of the air, over the cattle, over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth. So God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them.
And so, if there was one thing we could say, we say, okay, what distinguishes us from humans, from everything else? ChatGPT, dogs, we love our dogs and our cats. Our dogs, our cats, the plants, AI. If there's one thing that distinguishes us from everything else, what does that verse say it is?
We're made in God's image.
We're made in God's image. Now, we're going to talk about that in a different lesson, because that's a whole lesson in itself, what that is. But that is what the Bible says makes us human. We are human because we have God's image. And that tells us a couple of things. One, it tells us that we are human because God created us to be human. You know, we're not products of accident or products of random chance. Even, not just on the grand scale, on the individual scale, every single one of you sitting here are here today because God created you. That's what it means to be in the image of God. God is your creator. And secondly, it means that as humans, we have an eternal dimension to us and a spiritual connection that other things lack. And this kind of goes with the soul. But it's more than just a soul. You were created to be with God in a way that nothing else in creation is created to be with God.
He has created you to do a special chore mm-hmm. through him that you could do nothing without him.
Mm-hmm.
But to be a superhuman, you've got to have 100 slaves.
Okay.
I didn't quite follow
what the last sentence said. But yeah, we were created to be in a relationship with God, and that involves work. But that is a unique part of what it means to be human, that nothing else. Even if ChatGPT looks exactly like us one day, it won't be human because it can't have a relationship with God the way we can. And then third, it means that God has a special way of looking at you, that he does not do that with the rest of creation. Somebody read Matthew 10, 28 through 31, and somebody else get Luke 15, 3 through 7. Matthew 10, 28 through 31. What's that one?
Okay. 10?
Yes. 28 through 31. Then he wants Luke 15, 3 through 7. All right, next slide.
Do not be afraid of those who kill the body, but cannot kill the soul. Nor to be afraid of one who can destroy both the soul and body in hell. Are not two sparrows sold for a penny? Yet not one of them will fall to the ground outside of your Father's care. And even the very hairs of your head are all numbered. So do not be afraid. You are worth more than any sparrows.
And Luke 15, 3 through 7.
So he told them this parable. What man among you who has 100 sheep and loses one of them does not leave the 99 in the open field and go after the lost one until he is found? When he has found it, he joyfully puts it on his shoulders, and coming home, he calls his friends and neighbors together, saying to them, "Rejoice with me because I have found my lost sheep. I tell you, in the same way, there will be more joy in heaven over one sinner who repents than over 99 righteous people who don't need repentance."
Yeah. So these verses show, I mean, God uniquely loves you and cares about you and watches over you and knows you to a far greater extent than he does anything else in his creation, because you're made in his image. So you're made in image, which means God created you. You're made to have a close relationship with God, and that God cares for you more than he does everything else. So if that is what it means to be human, how should that affect the way that we live as humans and treat other people as humans?
Well, we should be more responsible.
Responsible for
what? For the way that we treat others.
You know, yeah. You know. Definitely. I mean, every human is in the image of God. Even the people we don't like, even the people who are mass murderers, they're still made in the image of God. It changes the way we treat other people and take our responsibility toward them.
And if we're supposed to be like God, then we love people like he does.
Yeah. We're in his image. We're supposed to look like him, which means we're supposed to do the kind of things that he's supposed to do. That's right, like Jesus does. How does it change the way we view where satisfaction and joy comes in life?
How you define satisfaction and joy.
Yeah.
Because it's all different.
It does. I mean, the animal one, you got the sexual being one that has a definition of where satisfaction and joy comes from. The economic view has satisfaction and joy. I'm blanking here, but the other ones.
The machine one.
All of these have views of where satisfaction and fulfillment came from, but none of them included a relationship with God as the answer, right? But if you are really made in the image of God, and part of that means is that you were created to have a relationship with God, then what does it mean when people are not pursuing their relationship with God? They're not getting that satisfaction and joy they're made to have by God.
Get their satisfaction and joy from other things.
of the world.
Yeah, and it's a fleeting satisfaction.
Right, it's not contentment.
Mm-hmm. Why are so many people discontent in the world? Because they don't know what it means to be human. They have other ideas of what it means to be human.
That's our Sunday school class this week. We might just use that.
Go for it.
I was looking at that contentment.
And so it does, this is a very important thing, and it does make a difference. Let me conclude. I had either four or five reasons why this is such an important topic. And some of these, it's kind of summarizing what we said. One of these, it's important for us to talk about this because everybody has a belief about what it means to be human. Even if somebody hasn't sat down and did what we did today, hey, how do you define human? Everybody, in some sense, has a definition in their mind of what it means to be human and what does that mean in terms of how you're supposed to treat other people and treat yourself. And so since everybody does have this view, it behooves us that we should be good to actually have the correct view. Secondly, this means that because everybody is thinking about what it means to be human, this gives us a chance to enter into the discussion with people who are lost. People who are lost, they don't really believe the Bible, they might not believe the resurrection, they might not believe about God, but everybody is asking the question, what does it mean to be human? And that is a place where we can get our foot in the door and begin conversations with them. What does it mean to be human and to actually act that out? The third reason is that people are, especially today, asking this question, what does it mean to be human? And we said this earlier, especially the youth in our age. Why is it so important, especially now, with the way youth culture is, for us in the church to study what does it mean to be human according to the Bible? Why is it important, knowing the youth culture we have, for us to talk about this?
I think it's because they treat life so, they want to end it. So many of them end their lives because of something that is so temporal and so just minuscule.
Yeah.
They end their life.
Yeah.
I mean, we've been such, not us necessarily, but in general, a world, we have been so lax with the way we treat human beings. I mean, if we didn't want to have you, we would have aborted you. He makes it so easy to write off someone or to get rid of someone. And, as a kid, you're like, wow, Mom didn't like me. She could have gotten rid of me. So then how does that affect them?
Yeah. I mean, teen suicide's on the rise, teen depression's on the rise, teen anxiety's on the rise, teen violence is on the rise.
I think people just analyze everything.
Like the kids
too
are?
Much. You should just come as a child and accept. Because I guess I'm either sitting here stupid or just I don't analyze.
I agree.
I just always believe.
I think they're told they need to analyze that, though.
I think
they're told you need to decide your sexuality now.
Yeah. It's a demonic influence.
Yeah.
And the only way to combat it is with.
And I'm just thankful I'm not raising little children today. I mean, I've got grandchildren, great grandchildren, but I'm not raising them. And I'm trying to, I just pray because it's like I say, I'm just thinking, why do you think that way? It's easy. God created us to be in His image.
And you and kids. The idea they form about what it means to be human, they solidify that at a young age, probably in high school, maybe even middle school. And then once they do that, it is very hard to change their minds that a human is something different.
Well, they watch those little Teletubbies and all that kind of stuff.
Teletubbies?
I don't
know anything bad about Teletubbies. I haven't seen
they're
it in a long time, though.
That's what my grandkids watched.
Anything bad in that show.
Well, that's what my grandkids watched. What are they watching now?
Aren't your grandkids my age, Jan?
They are. They are your age. They're older than you.
These days are exposed to so much more because of the media, because of TV, and because of radio, whatever. We were innocent. We didn't have a TV at the house. We grew up not having a TV. Kind of black and white, and then eventually color. But people always said that I was naive, or
Yeah, I mean these things were definitely around, I mean, Freud was
always been there,
like 100 years ago. It's just maybe they're bombarded with it more often.
Yeah. Well,
somebody who didn't grow up with like phones right next to them.
Ultimately, it comes down to our responsibility as parents, as grandparents, as church members, as people who are influencing the young people of the next generation. It's important that we not only just live a good life and, oh, we're, you know, Christians, hopefully they see it by the way we live, but also it's important to specifically speak that into our children and our grandchildren and the youth and the kids that we work with, that if we say it to them, that's really the way that they're going to learn it. Yeah. You can't just say, well, you know, whatever. You
well,
have, there's more to it.
To
that's right.
The world's not shy to tell them what they need to believe.
Yeah. So it's our job.
Way more willing to tell them than the church is a lot of times what they need to believe.
So we are responsible to do our part to speak the truth into these kids.
And you've got to know what the Bible says about this topic in order to speak truth about the topic. Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you just need to tie to the chair and speak truth to them. Because sometimes they don't want to listen.
They've got access to everything. Mm-hmm. And
that's how you raised your children.
Yeah.
They have more access to everything that's not the Word. And then they have access to the Word.
Mm-hmm. Well, because look at this right here. Well, you know, this has everything. Anything that you want to know about, you can ask it.
And you can access the Bible and phones and stuff. It's just the world is not shy to tell them what they need to believe and do. Or that we as Christians, often we are shy to put that step forward. And maybe it's because we don't know, you know, we don't know the Bible like we should, or I don't know, but we often are not as bold as the world is when it comes to talking to the youth and kids what they should believe about who they are as a human. And in the end, it's important, lastly, because it does affect how we behave. It affects the way we treat people. It affects the way we think of other things, like the doctrine of Christ, the doctrine of sin, the doctrine of God. Christ was a human, so what we think a human is affects what we think about Christ. You know, and you can see on a grander scale how this is true. Like, how did the Holocaust happen? How did slavery happen? It's because people had a wrong idea of what it meant to be human. And when you had an incorrect view of human, you can do horrible things to other humans. It matters. There's a, you know, there might be, you might say there's other doctrines in the Bible that are more important, like salvation. That's, you know, top tier important doctrine. But when you say what doctrine affects everyday life more so, this doctrine matters a lot. And it's the one that's questioned the most in our society right now. So any other comments or questions we'll close out with prayer? Let me pray for us then.